Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
friend? Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk. This is Michael Tech Talk Hatzler. I've got Dave Sparky Saganaki on the line with me as well. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Michael. Welcome to the program, all out there, all of our wonderful listeners.
Yeah. Hopefully everybody's keeping warm and dry today. Supposed to have another. You know, just this winter just never, it just never ends. I don't know what's going on, but I keep thinking, oh, finally, we're out of it. And it just keeps coming right back. So here we are. Man, Dave, so it sounds like I'm going to start off with all the excitement here first, because it sounds like we're locked in, we're connected, we're loaded. It's really going to happen. We're going down to Louisville in April, meeting up with Jay at the Conglomeration Convention, doing a live broadcast. This will be April 12th, I think, is the date for that. And just hanging out and being basically just being geeks and having fun.
Yeah.
Are you, man, don't tell me you're, you've got,
yeah.
You've got.
Oh, yeah, I'm coming. I'll be there. No, I haven't booked a room yet. You know, I don't, that's a lot of geekiness. Of course, this is a smaller convention, so
yes.
It won't be too bad. I was a bit overwhelmed at my last comic convention, you know, and I had a bit of a, you know, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of an out-of-body experience, maybe. because of the sheer wave, the tidal wave of geekiness, it's a lot to confront. But this is a smaller convention. I'll probably cope a lot better.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, and we can talk to Dave about this in a minute or two. I mean, not Dave, Jay. We can talk to Jay about this in a minute or two as well, and see his take on it. But from what he said, this is a very approachable, very achievable kind of conference to go to, more than the convention that you went to, or like, it's not like, you know, like going to the geek auto show, you know, the auto show for geeks. It's like when I went to the auto show a couple of weeks ago, and you know, and we're actually going to talk in a few minutes here with someone I met there, Zach Sharp, who is the number two right now, used to be number one, internationally ranked world pinball wizard, you know, we were there. That was the way to do that show. Was I went on a media day where there was nobody there. You go on a day like you're talking about with one of these conventions or Comic-Con or something, and I can imagine you're just, it's like you said, just waves of people, constant, you know, in your face geek stimulation, and very difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I think the big thing, I think it causes an interruption to the testosterone production.
Yes. Oh, man. Well, you know, we should probably hold on to some of our thoughts about the show, though, until we do have Jay on. Jay being, of course, one of the coordinators and organizers of the show. So he has a deep inside information and knowledge about it. I want to mention, though, to people too, if you're questioning the reality and the legitimacy of this, go to conglomeration.info, and on the front page now, Dave, on the very front, Saturday, March 1st, 2014, announcing the Conglomeration 2014 featured media guests. Tech Talk Radio. That's us. And they've got a very, very nice write-up about us on the page.
Wow.
You should go take a look and read it so that we know what we're supposed to live up to. And hopefully.
Now we're supposed to be there, right? We got to show up. This is happening in Louisville, Kentucky, by the way. I mean, we've talked about it before, but maybe folks are listening for the first time. Louisville, Kentucky, a lovely town. we should have a great time.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm really thrilled too. Now, you know, we should not have front page status here. It's just part of their blog thing. But the thing I'm really excited about too is that they've got the Louisville Board Gamers are going to be back. They've got the Great Wallow Games. So this is such a cool type of convention to go to. I couldn't be more excited. The Great Wallow Games is, if you've ever heard of or thought of a game, you're interested, you wanted to know, like, how do you play that Ticket to Ride? I just don't know how to do it. You can go into the room with the Great Wallow Games, go elbow somebody. There's going to be somebody there 24/7 and say, show me the game. Show me how to do it. Let's play. Let's throw down and do some Ticket to Ride, and somebody will be there and do it with you. That just blows me away. Why wasn't I doing this kind of stuff, forever? This is just so cool.
we'll have a good time. We'll have a good time.
Absolutely.
Not about that. Yeah, you know. Looking forward to it. And the weather should be nicer by then. And we'll be fine. Louisville has had a rough winter as well, relatively speaking for them. Nothing compared to what you guys had in Chicago. But they've had a... So spring in Louisville, they'll be excited.
Yes,
spring and geeks. The geeks will be in bloom in Louisville in April, early April.
yep, absolutely. No, this will be a good one. Unfortunately, we're going to miss it. We're going to talk to Zach Sharp in just a few minutes, as I mentioned. Now he's going to be down in Louisville. I believe it's next week, as a matter of fact, because the video game and gaming convention is actually happening there. He is going to be involved in one of the country's more prestigious pinball tournaments is happening down there as well. So he'll fill us in a little bit on that and give us some information on
very
that.
Cool.
So all good stuff. All good stuff. Before we do call Jay, we always try to go through a couple of the top news items and things that are going on. And, there's been a lot of stuff. We talked about last week, we talked about how Microsoft was going to lower the price of their OEM software, the operating system software, 70%. Now
they're talking about giving it away for free.
Exactly. What is this?
And with Office. Well, no, these are rumors. Nothing's been confirmed from Microsoft at this point. But the rumors are that they're going to be given 8.1 away for free for some devices, and possibly including Office with Bing.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if that's an online suite or, we don't know. It's just a rumor.
Yeah, no, it's totally a rumor. It would follow in the line with some of the other companies that are doing this. I mean, Google, of course, the one that comes to mind most quickly. Google's been offering not only, the Android operating system for free to a lot of devices, but also, too, if you do have a Google account, you can get Google's version of Office online quite easily.
Right.
And so this follows along with that. Now, Microsoft also just came out with their big re-envisioning and reimagining of what used to be called SkyDrive, used to be called Microsoft Live before that. The artist formerly known as, now it's called OneDrive. So they're moving to this thing, this OneDrive, and they had a promotion. I posted it up on the Tech Talk Facebook pages. That's facebook.com/TechTalkWRLR, that if you got in time, you would have had access to 100 gig worth of storage, as opposed to the standard 25 gig that they give you out of the box. Now, I was more excited about that when I first read it than I was upon second review, because it turns out that the 100 gig that they give you for, and I'm making air quotes here, for quote unquote free, was really just a promo for the first year, and then you would have had to pay for that extra space. Which, especially with storage space, that's kind of stinky, because, you get in there, you fill it up with 50, 60 gig, and then all of a sudden it's like that bill comes, and then you're, oh, gee, what do I do? What am I got to find somewhere for 30 gig,
You're so frugal. It's 100 gigs of online storage, dude. You can't expect to get that for free forever, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm a big fan of Dropbox, as people who listen to the show regularly know. And so my Dropbox account, I've got, how much do I have? I must have like, I've got 12 gig. I've got 12 gig free on there. My OneDrive account, I've got 25 gig. I also have a Box account that I use too. I love Box. Actually, it's a great alternative to a lot of these other ones, and has a lot of mobile functionality and features. And I think I've got 25 gig with Box. So, and then of course there's the Google storage.
I know, but I'm sure you can forgive people for trying to monetize what they're providing, don't you think?
As long as they don't do it on my back, that's fine.
Speaking about monetizing and Microsoft and all this stuff, I came across a surprising number. I think it was from TechCrunch. I'm not sure. Yeah, TechCrunch. Okay, how many downloads a day do you think the Windows Store has for apps?
The Windows Store. For apps, man. I don't even have an anchor to base that number on. I have no idea.
Yeah, about 4 million a day now.
What?
Yeah, that's what TechCrunch is saying. And that's based on they've only got about 100,000 apps. It's leveled off. It's leveled off to about 105,000-110,000 apps thereabouts. Because they keep pruning, they keep culling the bad ones.
Yeah.
The Apple Store only does 5.5 million a day.
Wow.
And the Windows Store is doing 4 million a day.
So they're that close. Okay, now that puts it into perspective. That's rather shocking, I think.
It could be a temporary surge. This has gone up since October. As of October, they had about 1.7. They averaged 1.7 million a day.
Okay.
Up to 4 million. It could be that it's a whole bunch of, post-Christmas, new PCs that people are, and tablets people are loading up.
Yes.
On their apps. It could be just a temporary surge. But that certainly could open the eyes of some developers that previously might have turned their back on Windows developing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Some of this I think may be tied into with the Connect Ed push that President Obama is moving through with. He's continuing. I really like the direction that is moving with. Now, if you hadn't heard, I think it was just a few weeks ago, President Obama and the Department of Education, the announced that they had developed these partnerships with Microsoft and with Apple. Now, the partnerships are defined as basically saying that Microsoft and Apple agreed to provide, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of equipment and software for this. And Microsoft was one of those with the Microsoft tablets and service. So that maybe is part of what's pushing some of this initiative, is people are starting to take advantage of these. I think it's a little quick for that to have given that much boost to it. But it'll be interesting to see how that impacts things as well. And then just recently, over the last week, we've also heard that Prezi, who is one of the premier or one of the main alternative presentation softwares to your Microsoft PowerPoints and your Apple I can't remember what they call theirs, but the Prezi has also said that they're going to offer like $100 million worth of free licensing again for education for the Connect Ed push and move. So maybe this is kind of all dovetailing together, where we're starting to see Microsoft decide that they really want to be a player, period. They're doing some of the things and taking cues and tips from Android, from Apple, and seeing if they can make it happen.
Well, I read something, and one of the quotes was Microsoft's just recent business model is a 20th century business model. where they're charging all kinds of money for operating systems and software, office suites and all these sorts of things, and it's caused them to have diminished market share.
Mm.
And Also, and speaking of, you know, you talk about Apple and the schools and such, you know, on the other side of the street, Apple's going to be providing iOS for cars. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I had.
Ferrari, Mercedes, and Volvo are going to get the iOS operating system in car, in sync, whatever you call, what do you call a car?
Yes.
Connectivity.
Yeah. And that's Apple is doing this. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Apple, one of the strengths with Apple, of course, and the thing that's been touted for a long time, is how incredibly stable it is because they've controlled and managed a lot of the functionality and feature set of it. And of course, the way that it interacts with hardware. So that merging or mixing with an automobile sort of environment where you need a high degree of stability makes a lot of sense. Now, Ford is...
Well, Apple's going with the high end, right? With Ferrari, Mercedes, and Volvo. Who's Ford get?
So,
what vendor do they pick?
They're Microsoft.
No.
Today.
No, they're switching over to BlackBerry.
The most recent thing I've heard is that they haven't chosen a direction yet, and maybe they're just playing it, but so the article that I was reading today, this is from I should bring it up so that I can tell you exactly who it is. I believe it's from TechCrunch though. That they state specifically that they are not tied to Microsoft, have considered BlackBerry, but have their eyes open to other options for developing the Ford NSYNC app and doing something, maybe doing something a little different. Now, I had heard at one point Android was on the tip of their tongues. I don't know if that's true anymore. I think they may just be using this to kind of pressure Microsoft into helping them work better with the NSYNC. Now, the NSYNC's one of the top rated dashboard audio and entertainment systems for cars. So, you know, you don't want to mess with it too much. They've done a good job with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, all that stuff. Well, the problem, I guess, is when they eliminate knobs for base, like heater and air conditioning functions, that sort of thing.
Yep.
When they move back to the touchscreen, I think, and so if you have any sort of a difficulty at all, I mean, I can understand them wanting the economy and such.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of people find frustration if you lose, you know, if you get a reset or a reboot on your dashboard and information center, then you know you can't stay warm in the winter. That's not good.
That's right. Yeah, and in fact, that was an interesting conversation, part of a conversation that I had at the auto show with the CMO, the chief marketing officer for the Ford Mustang project. Was he addressed precisely that? I'm not going to play that audio on air. I have the audio. I've thought about trying to bring it on air. I don't know if there's enough there for us to put it on air. But he had an interesting point in conversation about exactly that there is a difficulty when you try to, you know, make too modern, when you modernize your interactions too much. People really like those touch, you know, the touch, the buttons, the knobs, the wires, the wheels. We understand that, and we know how to work with it, and it cannot always be a good thing to pull away from that. I got to bring Jay on right away because I want to get Zach on here as well. Hey, good morning, Jay. There he is.
Oh, Jay, you scared us.
Yeah.
I have that effect on people. It's usually in person.
Exactly. We were. Oh man, I was so excited. We just got. I just saw this morning. I was telling people conglomeration.info. They can see that it's real. It's legitimate. It's actually happening. I don't know who did the write up for the Tech Talk show, but hats off to them. It's a really a wonderful breakdown of the show and an introduction to hopefully to the Louisville fan community, and we at least me, I couldn't be more excited. I can't wait to get down there and go to the Big Wallow games and you know, do everything else. We just have a great time down there.
Well, I am responsible for that write up. You guys are officially cleared with the head of programming and the chairman of the convention, so you are now obligated to attend because you said you were coming and we put you on the website. And if you don't, we're going to be very angry.
Yes, yes, exactly. No, don't worry. We've... Somebody will be there. Somebody will definitely be there. Well, and we've got hotel rooms reserved, at least on my end. We've got plane tickets have been purchased from people that have said they're going to be there because we're going to be there. So this is definitely happening. Again, couldn't be more excited. I think we're just going to have a blast. I've got to work with the station here and make sure that I get all the equipment. Verizon is on board with us. They're going to support us. I can't use the word sponsor, but they're going to support us in our Wi-Fi needs and gadget desires down there. I also too got confirmation just yesterday, and shouts out to Dave for helping set this up, that we're going to have some giveaways from the Stan Lee DVDs I'm losing it. It's for the I'm losing my mind.
I'll be giving away a DVD about Stan Lee. It's a series. It's like 7 CDs or something? Like
well,
seven DVDs?
So we're going to have 5 DVDs to give away, but I also asked them if they have any more collateral and other things that we can present and give away at the same time. But it's surrounding a Stan Lee cartoon that was produced. I believe it's part of the X-Men canon thing. I can't remember exactly. It's actually been in production already and apparently on some of the cartoon networks or something like this. Like I said, I did not read it too closely. Dave kind of set this up for us, but I will have more information as we get closer. So it's going to be exciting. We're going to, long and short of it, it's going to be exciting. We're going to have a lot of stuff going on. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to try not to intrude too much on the general feel of the the show and make annoyances of ourselves, but we'll have a good time.
Well, just bear in mind, sort of the theme of conglomeration is a big nerdy family vacation. It just so happens that the nerdy family in question is 500 people, but it's not a very formal atmosphere. You know, there's not a lot of rigor or anything. It's just sort of like, yeah, we're going to get together and in this room we're going to talk about Star Trek for an hour. How's that sit with you? Okay, cool. And over here we're going to work on some zombie makeup. Is that good with you? Awesome. You know, it's not rigorous. Perfect. And, you know, we don't give it this whole, and now at 2:15 we shall have the stormtroopers and you will all comply because there are stormtroopers now. But that's not how we do things. It's sort of like, meh. We're going to be doing something for an hour in here. You want to come in? Come in. You know, it's all good by us.
Perfect. That's perfect for us. Because, yeah, if they desired rigor or organization, coordination, or any other in, they'd be sorely out of luck.
No, the hardest decision you're going to have to make while you're here is on Saturday. The big event on Saturday night is the masquerade, where all the costumers get together and sort of show off what they've been working on or what they're doing and so on. And we have a very little informal show where people can judge costumes. So a bunch of folks go do that. And a lot of us that are on the organizing committee sneak out and go to Mongolian barbecue while that's going on, because since the whole convention is effectively at the masquerade party, the organizing group goes out and gets a really good meal. So you guys are welcome to come with us for Mongolian barbecue, or you can hang out with the costumers.
Ah, hey, interesting. That, yeah.
Sounds like a tough choice.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to wing it. I don't know if I can make that decision at this point. I have to see what we think when we get there. Well, and as I mentioned to a close friend of mine is actually flying in from Baltimore in order to join us as well. So I'm excited about that. And I'm actually thinking, in fact, I may try to get in a day early Thursday to enjoy the sights, sounds, and smells of Louisville before we do that. And so I think we're just gonna have a great time. I gotta keep us moving here. Unfortunately, I've got Zach Sharp is waiting in the wings virtually for us to bring him on and talk to us a little bit about Chicago pinball and things like that. So, Jay, I'm gonna keep us moving. We will definitely start this conversation up again next week when we have a little bit more time and maybe a little more details on our ends too. The question you asked last week was actually incredibly, I don't know if this is apropos or prescient, we just discovered like another 700 and some odd Earth-like planets, but the question specifically that you had asked was, in our own solar system, which planet has got the most dramatic winter?
Yes. Which planet, if you had to spend winter on it, would be the worst place to do it? And that's probably a somewhat subjective question, but the general answer is Uranus. Besides the fact that the planet's name is a joke in English, Uranus has 21-year-long winter. Because, unlike Earth, it has about a 23-24 degree axial inclination off the ecliptic, basically. That's the tilt that gives us seasons. Uranus has an 82-degree inclination. It's almost 90 degrees. It's like it's been knocked over on its side. So for literally a quarter of its orbit, and its orbits are 84 years, one pole points entirely away from the sun. An entire hemisphere is basically all night, all the time.
Wow.
21 years of night, and it's bad enough that you're also effectively, you know, 400 times further away from the sun than we are. So the coldest temperature in winter, because it just doesn't vary, because it doesn't get hotter, there's no sunrise or sunset during that winter, it's -357 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
You can legitimately just put a Kelvin thermometer outside, because it's more easy than doing it. Now, what's interesting about this is that actually it's not the coldest place in the solar system. The absolute pole of Uranus at the peak of winter is probably a few degrees colder than Neptune. Neptune is around 353 degrees. The problem with Neptune is Neptune has almost no axial tilt. It's just all cold all the time. It doesn't have winter because it doesn't have summer. It's just always -350 degrees on Neptune, period. If you're a Uranian, it's like, oh, it's gotten up to a balmy, you know, 220 below zero here in the summer, but oh, God, this 21-year winter when it gets down to almost -360, I can't handle that.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, you finally get acclimated to that bitter cold, and then all of a sudden, you know, it increases 150 degrees, and you're not used to it anymore. It's like living in Chicago.
Well, and the other weird thing, we start getting into these discussions, is the fact that for all of this horrible inclination and winter, Uranus actually has less temperature variation than Earth does, because it has such long winters. It doesn't have as dynamic a weather system, and it also doesn't have any sort of heat-generating core, or as far as we can tell, it does not. There may be some sort of convection system keeping its core temperature from reaching the upper layers of the cloud system, but because we have an internally heated planet and an externally heated planet, and the external heat varies, we have an extremely dynamic weather system. So you can have on the same planet Vostok Station, Antarctica, and the Sahara at the same time.
Oh man! Oh, and
somebody asks, we should say we would decline your invitation to Uranus.
On many levels, you should decline that invitation. That's probably a quintuple entendre of no.
No. No.
Oh man. All right, so Customer Jones did a great job jumping in on that one, of course, as usual. And if people are looking to answer some of these questions, you can always go to facebook.com/ Tech Talk WRLR. But Jay, what should we be thinking about next week?
Well, we're coming up this week on the 34th anniversary of arguably the most successful home computer, or at least in the top five home computers of all time, which is the Sinclair ZX81, which in the U.S. was actually marketed as the Timex Sinclair 1000. It was it was basically a precursor to a lot of the Commodore 64 generation of home computers, but you could either buy it pre-built or in a kit, and it just sold like gangbusters. You know, old school kit computer guys know the ZX81 as basically like the granddaddy of you know, it's up there with the Altair 8800. Interesting thing about the Sinclair ZX81 is it was released on the anniversary of another major event in home computing, and they didn't even know it. So what other event was at the, celebrated its anniversary on the release date, March 5th, 1981, as the Sinclair ZX81?
Good good question. Man. Now, is it, did they not know about it because it wasn't, there wasn't a way to know about it, or they didn't know it because they just weren't paying attention?
They didn't know about it because I don't think history would have acknowledged this anniversary as being significant until years later.
Okay. That's what I was curious about. Oh man, which is probably a big hint, but
yes. Put another way, you could make a real good argument that March 5th should be International Home Computing Day. Because these two separate events happened to occur on the same date, not on the same year, but on the same date in different years, and both had unbelievable influence on home computing.
Excellent. No, that's a good one. And I challenge people to try and do it without a Google. Because I know, I bet you if you did a Google, you'd come up with it pretty quickly. But if you can do it without a Google, that would be awesome. Again, answers can always be sent to facebook.com/techtalkwrlr or email us at techtalk@wrlr.fm. Jay, I am going to let you go. JayGarman.net is where people can find more about Jay Garman. And of course, conglomeration.info is where we can see more about what's going on in April. And Jay is going to be there as one of the organizers, of course, as will we. And thanks as always. We'll be talking to you as soon as we can.
All right. Have a good weekend, fellas.
You too. Take care,
Jay.
Thanks, Jay. Jay Garman.
Another great question.
Oh man, every week. You know, I'm trying to come up with some creative ideas for things that we can do in Louisville surrounding Jay and the trivia and things that are happening with that. You know, if readers have or listeners have some good ideas, make sure and send them. I'm thinking of kind of a fact or fiction or a fantasy or fiction kind of idea where we can throw different ideas.
You proposed that and I didn't respond, but I think that's a great idea.
Good morning, Zach.
Morning.
Hey, I apologize. We ran very late today. Not atypically for us, but don't read anything into that. Couldn't be more excited to have you on. This is Zach Sharp. We're talking to Zach. I we've met a couple times now, but why don't you give your 2-second intro and then let's talk some pinball.
Sure. My name is Zach Sharp. I'm from Chicago, and I am most notably known as one of the best pinball players in the entire world. I am currently ranked 2nd out of roughly 22,000 players.
Very cool. Absolutely, and I can attest to the skill and expertise. You and I did not get a chance to play head to head, but I was able to watch over your shoulder. We were together at the auto show where Ford was rolling out their new Stern Mustang themed pinball machine, but then also too at GameWorks in Schaumburg this last Sunday, there was a fantastic charity pinball tournament where I'm in the top 10,000 worldwide. I'll have people know. Yeah. So, in fact, I am exactly 6,300th in the world right now. So, so take that. Absolutely. It's, you know, I think a lot of people see pinball either as something that you did when you were a kid, or, you know, the once in a blue moon that you go and you're drinking a blue moon and, you know, in playing and so on. But for a lot of people, it can be much more than just a simple hobby. And obviously you're one of these people. How did this happen? How did you decide and become and work and be good enough to be the number 1, number 2 player in the world?
Well, I guess I can kind of get into the history of my father just a little bit. We can touch on that later. But I was born into pinball. My dad has always worked in the industry. We grew up with pinball machines in our houses. So, you know, from when I was an infant and he had the machines on, my brother and I would fall asleep to flashing lights and bells. And, you know, we played it growing up. And at the time, there weren't many quote-unquote tournaments around. There was usually one or two big shows that had a tournament. And when we were kids, we were always very competitive, always playing sports, you know, baseball, basketball, football. And, you know, we saw there was a pinball tournament and there was a juniors division. And our father at first actually would not let us play. He was afraid that we would have, you know, sibling rivalry, we wouldn't get along. So after many years of just begging and pleading, like, we can beat these kids, let us play, because, you know, naturally we're just very competitive. He finally caved in. I believe I was 11 years old, my brother was 13, and we were really good. We just dominated the junior scene for, you know, that five-year stretch. Well, 3 years for my brother, because you get knocked out when you're 16. But, yeah, I mean, we just dominated, and if anything, it grew our relationship. There was no rivalry. You know, when we play against each other, of course, it's to the death. But, yeah, you know, when I'm not playing against Josh head-to-head, you know, I'm his biggest cheerleader. So,
And
it
I wanted
kinda has bonded us.
Yeah, and I was going to mention, you know, that that at the competition on Sunday, you know, you look through the roster here in the ratings, and there's Zach Sharp, you know, is there right underneath Josh, and then just a line away is Dad Roger, all in the mix. All playing hard, and yeah, I did not see, and nothing ever came to blows. So apparently, you guys have resolved any sibling rivalry kind of competition stuff. Was that ever tough though? I mean, was there ever a time when Josh was just? I mean, you know, I know how brothers are. I've got two sons myself, and I can just imagine in that sort of environment that, you know, I can see why your dad would be concerned. Did it ever come to that? Did either of you ever kind of just get really mad that the other guy was better?
No. I mean, obviously, you know, we're both very competitive. So when I lose to him, I wouldn't say I'm happy, but it was never bad sportsmanship. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess this goes more than just my brother and I, but the competitive pinball scene in general. I kind of equate it to golf, where, yes, you're playing against an opponent, but it's really on yourself.
Yeah.
You know, if my brother's making his shots, or, you know, like for golf, if he's making his putts and I'm missing my shots, it's like I'm mad at myself. I'm not mad at Josh for doing well, or my opponent. Like, I'm mad at myself because I keep breaking the shot.
Yep.
So there's no one to blame but myself.
That's
so there's not really much hostility on the scene. It's more internal hostility.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I can imagine, you know, there's an element of, you know, anger at yourself, maybe also to, you know, at the gods, where it's like, you're so lucky. How did that happen? Now, one thing, though, I want to mention, too, a lot of people who play casually may, you know, they have fun and they're going to say, oh, you know, pinball, it must all be about the reflexes and the speed and so on. But I can tell you, and I'd love to hear your insight on that, but I can tell you, watching really good players play, you can see there's actually a tremendous amount of technique. You know, I noticed you in particular have a fabulous ball pass that you do from flipper to flipper, obviously well practiced, and that allows you to hit those you know, the points that you want. You know, how much would you say is a balance between, like I said, that reflex and that technique?
It's tough to put a number on that. In general, you know, with pinball, the ball is wild. And there's always kind of been this statistic thrown around that it's 75% skill, 25% luck. Because, you know, as soon as you launch that ball, as I'm sure you could tell when on some of the games you played, as soon as you, you know, plunge that ball, the ball is instantly wild. You don't know where it's going to go. I mean, you can anticipate where it's going to bounce, but until you have that ball cradled on your flipper, you know, all bets are off. So, you know, the best players always are trying to get control however they can, whether there's special, I guess, techniques and moves such as live catching where you flip the flipper up and you hit the ball right at the apex of the flipper. It's kind of hard to explain on the phone, but it deadens the ball like instantly and the ball traps on your flipper.
Yes.
Sometimes it sounds counterintuitive. If you don't flip, that actually helps deadens the ball's momentum. So if the ball's coming down to the left flipper, you know, your instinct is to, you know, kind of flip away. But you'd be surprised that if you don't flip and you let it bounce from the left flipper, it can go over to the right flipper really slowly and you can trap up and cradle and kind of map out your next shot.
Yeah.
My frustration with pinball is because of the color of the ball, it's silver, you can't tell how much it's spinning. You know, I always thought that it might be more, you might introduce more skill to the game if you actually put a stripe on the ball so you could get more of a sense of how fast the ball is spinning when you're trying to get a quick shot off.
You know, sometimes the ball is spinning so much. I know there's some people out there who kind of mod their machines with special unique balls, kind of like what you are saying, like, you know, a stripe or artwork on it. And to tell you the truth, I don't know if it helps. Like, I've played some of those games before, and the ball's going so fast, and you have to make reactions so quickly that, you know, looking at the stripe on the ball, I don't think it would help that much. If anything, I mean, it's kind of like pool, where there's sometimes so much weird, like, English on the ball that, you know, sometimes it settles nicely, other times it'll start rolling and doing some, you know, funky ball spin. So it's really just... To me, it's like it's a gut reaction and quick reflexes on, you know, how the ball is going to interact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine.
What's your number one tip? What's your number one tip to becoming a better pinball player?
Don't flip both flippers at the same time.
That opens up that channel, man. No, that and so why? Why not flipping both flippers at the same time? What does that do?
Well, there's a couple reasons. I like to use this. As you can tell, I like using analogies, but, you know, if you're a boxer, do you punch with both hands at the same time? You kind of try to set up your punches. You know, if you're only, you know, using the left flipper or your left fist, you only want to use that flipper button. You kind of want to think of the flipper buttons as extensions of your fingers. And sometimes when you flip both at the same time, a ball that you normally could have saved, say that it's coming down on the left side, you can actually block yourself. If you flip both at the same time, you can actually hit the underside of the other flipper, where if you just independently hit one flipper, you would still be alive.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I can visualize that. Yeah, where you'd be hitting the ball off, and instead of going up back into play, it actually hits the other underside of the other flipper, like you're saying, and then boom, then you're out of play, and the round's done. The round's done.
Yeah, and sometimes... to tip the ball, like if the ball is going kind of down the middle, you can actually hold up one flipper, get enough of the ball can graze a flipper and bounce it over to the other side, and then you can use the other flipper to kind of whack it out. But you can't do that if you're flipping both at the same time.
I have a very specific question about tournaments and about the tournament, specifically the tournament last Saturday. So now we played, there was a bank of machines we played. It was great because we got to play a number of different machines. I don't know if that's typical or not, but that was a lot of fun. One thing that I noticed, though, not any of the machines, although we had multi-ball at every machine, there didn't seem to be an ability or an option on any of the machines to get extra balls. Is that a tournament setting, or is that just coincidence that none of these machines had an extra ball configured, or was there any reason for that?
You're absolutely right. It was tournament settings. But as you can see with a lot of the really good players there, if there were extra balls, games would last a really, really long time. So for tournament play, you know, extra balls are usually always turned off where possible, and the tilt is set more sensitive. Because a lot of the times, if you find like a pinball machine in the wild, you might notice that you can shake it a lot and, you know, kind of do some crazy saves because there's no tilt in there.
Yeah.
Again, you know, a really good player could seamlessly play forever if there was no tilt and extra balls on. So for tournament play, it's usually like a standard of, you know, sensitive tilt, the machine is set steeper, and no extra balls.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was another thing that I noticed, too, is that there was some adjustment being done on some of the machines in order to, you know, not only to make them, of course, stand evenly without, you know, without imbalance, but also, too, to make them either a little steeper or a little shallower. And, of course, the steeper it is, the faster the speed is of those balls coming down. The Family Guy machine that we were playing on, in fact, was a little too fast, I think, in the beginning, and so they kind of... they increased the or decreased the angle on that one. Is there a favored machine that you have at this point? You know, when you walk into a tournament, like you're going down to Louisville, I know in a week there's a big tournament going on down there. When you walk in the door there, and you, is there a machine that you look for and you say, oh, okay, I am gonna rock on this. I will absolutely rule this tourney because they've got machine X here. Or are you pretty much an equal opportunity? You know, I'll take you on whatever you put in front of me.
I mean, I like to think of myself as a well-rounded, balanced player. So in my mind, it doesn't matter what machines you throw at me. I feel confident that I will beat anyone and everyone on it. Whether that's true or not, you know, that's another story. But I mean, I would say, you know, I love control. What one possible? So if there's any machine that has a lot of safe shots, mm-hmm. that would be the one that I'm probably more geared towards.
Mm-hmm.
So on the Bank of Games, I don't know if you got a chance to play it this past weekend. There's a machine called 24.
Yes.
And that game definitely had the most control because you have, you know, the left ramp and the right ramp, which leads towards multi-ball. And, you know, if you're not missing shots, you can continuously get multi-ball, which is, you know, a very safe strategy. And ironically, that was a game that I played against my brother to knock him out of the tournament. So.
Excellent. Hey, I want to make sure we talk to a little bit. You mentioned, you know, we talked in the beginning there a little bit about your family connection to pinball. Tell us a little bit about your dad and some of the stuff that you guys got involved with. I mean, for him, for his life, and you from a very young age.
Sure. I'll try to give the condensed version, but pinball was illegal from the 1940s through the 70s because it was seen as a game of luck, not skill.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's like this gambling stigma with it because games used to actually pay out money back in the day.
Mm.
So there was, you know, this law that, you know, pinball was illegal or machines can't pay out or award free games. And it lasted for, you know, a long time. I mean, almost, you know, over 30 years. And my father was writing a book on pinball and he got contacted to testify in front of a jury in New York in 1976 to prove it was a game of skill. Because at the time, he was arguably the best pinball player in the world. He built up quite a reputation. I don't know if you... There weren't as many tournaments back then, but he was pretty much seen as kind of like an all-star pinball player. So he went in front of a courtroom, a jury, all crowded around him. If you know, if you search for Roger Sharp, you can find a random image of like eight people just completely crowding him on this machine. And he kind of like Babe Ruth called his shots. He hit it and they overturned it. Pinball became legal, you know, in Chicago, New York, LA, like all the major metropolitan cities where it was illegal. And so the funny quote my friends like to say is, my father saved pinball.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, that's, and you know, it's, from from that story, I mean, it's arguably true that he did. Certainly, pinball was a major component of, you know, everywhere that I hung out when I was in my teens.
and a key component too of pinball history is not your dad saved pinball, but pinball actually saved lots of small merchants
Tabletop games brought in enough income to keep keep a lot of these businesses afloat.
There you go. And yeah. I don't know the exact statistic, but I know in like after Camoa is legal in like the 70s and 80s, and I don't know if I got into the early 90s, but the pinball industry was making more money than Hollywood.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But that's certainly not the case now. Where can you find pinball machines now to play?
That's a great question. I mean, obviously, arcades in general aren't much around. You can find like a Dave & Buster's, a GameWorks, but I know a lot of our childhood arcades are no longer around. And, you know, pinball machines are definitely not made in the same quantity as they were in the past, but I would say the movement has definitely grown within the last, you know, 5-6 years, especially with tournaments and competitive play. In order to find, you know, pinball machines on location, you know, the community is really good at kind of sending out knowledge. I don't know the exact app name. I think it's actually called Pinball Map. These developers in Oregon created this app where people can kind of submit where there's machines located essentially all over the world. So, you know, if you're down the street on Teddy in Chicago, you know, Teddy in Montrose, and there's a pinball machine, you can kind of submit it to this app and it goes into this database. But in terms of the local Chicago scene, it's grown tremendously in the last couple of years. There's GameWorks in Schaumburg, which has, I believe, 10 machines. There's Emporium, which is kind of like a barcade in Wicker Park area. Logan Hardware just expanded and opened up this new similar type of barcade with 25 pinball machines, and that's in Logan Square. Headquarters.
You're covering all my old neighborhoods. I used to live around Montrose, Jersey, grew up in Wicker Park, spent a lot of time in Logan Square as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's growing. I know there's monthly tournaments that are held. I know the first Tuesday of every month in Schaumburg, GameWorks has a tournament that starts at 7 p.m. A lot of local players come out for that. The second Tuesday of every month, there's this arcade called Brixie's, which is located in Brookfield, which is a little bit down south, but they host that's the third Tuesday, sorry. there's Emporium, which holds their monthly tournament on Tuesdays, the fourth Tuesday of every month. And I believe Logan Hardware is going to perhaps be the second Tuesday of every month.
Now, is there a resource for finding, if you're really just interested in tournaments, for example, finding tournaments? I know like the IFPA, which is the International Flipper Pinball Association, has a website.
Yeah.
I see a link there for tournaments and a calendar and things like this. But how easy is it, you know, if I want to find one around me, is that the best place to go to looking for tournaments?
That is the best place to go in terms of trying to find a tournament anywhere. Funny enough, I was working in Germany for 3 months at the end of last year, and I used that tournament, you know, calendar to search for tournaments that were close to Germany. And, you know, it's like, oh, wow, there's one in Denmark one weekend, and there's one in the Netherlands and Italy, and you can choose where you're looking for a tournament.
Wow. Okay. Cool. So I'm going to throw that. We're coming close to the end of our time. Unfortunately, I'm going to throw that out for people as definitely one of our sites that they should go to, ifpapinball.com, and that IFPA stands for International Flipper Pinball Association. And then I'm also too going to mention as well that it looks like, yes, if you've got an iPhone, you can go and look up Pinball Finder, which is, I think, the app you were talking about, and that will tell you everywhere around you, and not only like where you can play pinball. You know, it'll give you the name of the venue, but also too what pinball machines that they have available there. So if you're really excited about playing Avengers or Iron Man this year, you know, something like that, you know, which came out a couple of years ago, that is the place you can find out exactly what you know, what you can find. Now there's also two websites that you can look up that'll have other information, but I think that'll at least get people started. And there's
not to interrupt you, I want to add one more organization and link that is tremendous of showcasing. If you want to watch like live competitive pinball, papa.tv, that's papa.tv. That's the Professional and Amateur Pinball Association, but they have a wide range of videos and streaming coverage of tournaments. And they have tutorials, flipper tricks, skills that are like on video. So that's a great repository of information to just like watch. If you, you know, want to learn, you know, how do you play a Family Guy? You can watch a tournament game of people playing Family Guy from, you know, 3 years ago.
Excellent.
That's a great resource.
Oh, that's very cool. Now, I saw some people with some Papa t-shirts, and I wasn't sure what that was. So that's great. That's great information. Yeah, so that's Papa, P-A-P-A dot TV or papa.org also will work for you.
Correct.
And yeah, and I see they've got a Terminator 2 tutorial is just now made available. It is great stuff. Man, you know, you, of course, you couldn't tell me this before the tournament. No. Yeah. Now I see how he wins. All right, that's where the competitiveness comes in.
And as we know, the timing of things is very important, Michael.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Dave is not so subtly telling me, and I've got Rob sitting across from me. The timing, unfortunately, is run out for us here. Zach, you know, I again can't tell you enough how much I appreciated your time, but also too the opportunity to talk to you today, to have met you and played at least in the same area as you. I do not believe this is going to be the last time that we speak. I wish you all the best in Louisville, which is, I know, your next tournament coming up. I think we've got some great links, and I hope that maybe fairly soon we can have you back on air again. And if not, hey, maybe I'll get a chance to crack the top 5,000 world listings.
You gotta start somewhere, so.
That's it. Exactly. Well, thanks again, Zach. I've got to let you run. And Dave, thank you as always for joining us here. And I'm cutting you both out. We'll be talking soon. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye. That was Zach Sharp, number two, used to be very close to number one still, pinball wizard in the world. And Dave Sparky Saganaki, of course. Don't forget, we are also going to be in Louisville in April for the conglomeration convention. And I'm going to cut it out here. I'm not even going to play a podcast only song of the week because we are out of time. Up next is going to be Rob Rigel with Rob Shot First. He's going to be talking to you about some very cool science stuff. I just hazarding a guess, but I'm thinking that new planets and 715, he tells me, new planets. That's going to be on the agenda, so don't go away. You've been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR, LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned, and we'll be back at you next week. Have a great one.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.